This podcast is brought to you by KVH Industries, which creates and delivers the innovations that enable our mobile world. A global leader in mobile connectivity, KVH's groundbreaking, award-winning solutions enable people on leisure boats, yachts, and commercial vessels to stay connected to business, family, and friends using innovative hybrid communications and content. Did you know, Sophia? The KVH's recent product launch, TrackNet, is a hybrid solution offering intelligent switching among satellite, cellular, and Wi-Fi networks all under one dome.
All under one dome? Wow.
A single dome. Or that KVH's award-winning TrackVision family of fully stabilized marine satellite systems deliver premium satellite TV from services worldwide.
Does that mean you can watch Emily in Paris wherever in the world you are, Stuart?
Actually, someone had a go at me about watching Emily in Paris recently. I said, you watch Emily in Paris? It's on. I'm not saying I'm paying massive attention to it. It's just on. Anyway, so if you can peel your eyes away from Emily in Paris, check out KVH online at kvh.com, at Facebook at KVH Yachting and Boating, on Instagram at KVH Yachting, and also visit KVH Yachting and Boating on LinkedIn. On with the show. Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson.
Morning, Stuart.
Sad. Morning, Sophia.
That you're not under a table this week, like last week's attempted recording.
Yeah, massive apologies for last week. So we did try. I was at Salone in Milan last week in a very echoey Airbnb. We did attempt to record. I was sitting under a kitchen table with a duvet over it, which created a nice sounding mini studio. But then the Wi-Fi kept cutting out because it was a really crappy Airbnb. So we failed spectacularly through various challenges.
As my team would say, they core mem.
They what?
Core mem.
What does that mean?
It means core memory, which is a sort of iconic memory, I'm led to believe.
Okay.
So yeah, core mem, you under the kitchen table.
Yeah, in my weird dark duvet studio. Yeah, but the Wi-Fi then didn't work. So yeah, huge apologies for not bringing your podcast last week. We really genuinely did try and go to quite stupid and extraordinary lengths to make it happen. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed Sophia's interview from the Superyacht Design Festival earlier this year with some luminaries from the Italian shipyard industry, talking about how layouts are evolving and changing and things like that. So we're not going to completely just go over what we were going to talk about last week, but we should hear from Sophia because she last week was fresh from Belize and a trip down there with some brokers. So tell us more about how that went, Sophia.
Yeah, it was probably just as well we delayed the podcast last week because I was quite jet lagged. So I'm not sure I'd have made that much sense. So it probably worked in my favor. But yeah, I mean, in short, it was unbelievable.
Oh, no. Was that the name of the WhatsApp group?
No, but I did buy a t-shirt that said unbelievable. And we did sing I'm a Belizer on the last night at a very dodgy karaoke session.
Excellent.
Strong punning. But aside from the strong punning, so I was down there with 9 charter brokers and managers. We managed to get a pretty good spectrum from across the industry. So we had representatives from Campus and Nicholson's Fraser, Ocean Independence, IYC, Denison, Wyco, Burgess, Hill Robertson, and Northrop & Johnson. Predominantly from their Fort Lauderdale offices. So we all flew down from Miami and we flew down. Then once we landed in Belize City, we then went on again to a place called Placencia, which is sort of halfway down the Belizean coast. And it's kind of one of the tourism hubs. Lots of beautiful private houses being built there and then a few lovely resorts. So we were staying at one called Itzana, which is a member of the small luxury hotels of the world. And they are beautiful, beautiful properties down there. So the first day, most of the team went out diving. I think they had a pretty spectacular wall dive. Apparently there were these group of nurse sharks that just kind of followed them around for the entire dive. I think people have been feeding them when they go diving. So the nurse sharks have realized they're onto a good thing when they when they see these people drop into the water near them.
You weren't tempted to strap on the scuba tank and...
So I am actually quite asthmatic and I'm therefore not allowed to dive, which actually is a real shame because in this job, can you imagine some of the... I would have had diving opportunities that people would have killed for.
Yeah.
So it's a real shame. But yeah, I think they had an amazing time. Unfortunately, for those of us that couldn't dive, we just went to a private island instead and waited for them to return. So,
oh my God.
It wasn't all bad. So yeah, hung out on this incredible private island, which was owned by a South African called Jonathan. And I'm always fascinated by these characters that you meet. So he'd spent most of his career opening various Oman resorts all over the world. And then at some point ended up in Belize and thought, this is the place for me, gonna buy a private island. Has just built a huge kind of pizza oven and barbecue on it and then offers it up for days for either couples to come in or for groups of kind of up to 20 to come in, cooks them a fabulous lunch, shows them around, and then sends them on their way again. But
sounds,
yeah.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, I think Jonathan's got something right in life. So yeah, that was a pretty special day. And then the next day we got on another small hopper flight down to Punta Gorda, which is even further south. And that's kind of the place in Belize, essentially, where the reef, because Belize has got 190 nautical mile barrier reef, so second only to the Great Barrier Reef. And that's kind of where the reef literally meets the rainforest, which is not many places in the world. I guess Queensland's one of the only other places that I've been like that, where you've got reef and rainforest right next to each other. So we flew down there and then we took a boat kind of from there up the river, sort of properly into the rainforest to this beautiful property called Coppeltree. And had another brilliant lunch there. And then they've set up a huge kind of rum and chocolate making facility so that if you're staying as a guest, you can go and see how the whole process happens and obviously have a few tastings along the way as well. And then we flew back and that night we went for dinner at Francis Ford Coppola's place called Turtle Inn there. Obviously the director of Godfather fame. He now owns 3 hotels in Belize and I think he's very heavily involved in them. He certainly isn't a silent partner. I get the impression having spoken to the GM. And then on the final day, we did the kind of work element of the trip. So we hosted a round table with all of obviously the charter brokers and managers, and then also lots of representatives from Belize Tourism, including the Minister of Tourism. It was a bit hit and miss as to whether he was going to make it, as I find it quite often is with these ministers, but he did make it. And I hope it was very beneficial to the tourism board and that they gave some really insightful feedback kind of their experience, what would be needed to get more yachts there, what some of their concerns would be, what some of the parts they'd love to be in. It got very technical at one point to do with tax and the different levels of charter tax and charter fees. And I was mildly out of my depth, but thankfully we got to the end of that. And I think it was, yeah, very useful for everyone involved. And then we went on to have a kind of beautiful sunset cruise around Placentia that evening, which eventually ended up in the aforementioned questionable karaoke session.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
So dodgy singing aside, did the brokers think there was a future for Superyacht Charter in Belize?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they're all very clear that obviously at the moment, Belize has very limited infrastructure. And it's hard, as adventurous as owners and charterers say they are, without that infrastructure, it does take quite a brave owner to take that plunge and put the yacht there. But they had some really interesting ideas about how Belize could work with other destinations in that area. You know, that whole area is really picking up interest at the moment, Costa Rica, Panama, Mexico, and how they could, you know, work with those destinations to almost kind of create itineraries for that region as a whole. And obviously further down the line, I think, you know, if you put infrastructure in Belize, you absolutely, I think yachts would flock there. But obviously that is a huge multi-year multi-million dollar investment to do that. But yeah, I think they thought it had a lot to offer. They loved, I mean, the people of Belize are just so friendly and welcoming. And I think they love that, you know, the scenery is beautiful. The diving's amazing. There's so much to offer, but it is at the moment still an adventurous destination. But then that's also part of its appeal because, you know, what the brokers are saying is that people are coming to them, not necessarily with a destination in mind. They're just saying, we want to go somewhere new and different. And Belize 100% is somewhere new and different.
If you talk about new and adventurous destinations, there's a big feature about cruising the Amazon in the next issue of the magazine.
Of course there is, Stuart. For reference, listeners, Stuart has a mild obsession with cruising in rivers.
I just think I couldn't imagine anything cooler. And it is more possible than I thought. So we got a writer to look into it. And you can actually charter some decent yachts on the river if you didn't want to take your own. You know, that's in their June issue, which we're just, in fact, we're finishing up today, aren't we? But yeah, but anyway, back to Belize. Lots more Belize content to come over the next few months, which is great. Yeah, it looked amazing. I'd love to go. So next time, I might just pretend I'm a charter broker and slip into the back of the plane and hope no one notices. We've got some other events ongoing this week. Obviously, MIBA's happening in Barcelona. So who's at MIBA?
Georgia, our Charter and Destinations editor.
That's right. And the Palma International Boat Show.
Holly, our online editor, is there. And then Georgia and Adam, our head of social, are heading out to the Mediterranean Yacht Show in Greece this weekend as well. So it's a busy. And Gabrielle, our business writer, is going to the Turkish Charter Show next weekend.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm potentially also going to Monaco next week. And if you can remember all of that, Stuart, I'll be impressed.
There's no way. We've got some Captain's Club drinks in Palma. So if you're a super yacht captain and you're in Palma, have a look at those, or just drop us a line at podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com. I'm sure the guys would be absolutely delighted to see you.
How was Milan though, Stuart? It's not naturally where I picture you.
I loved it. I mean, I love Milan anyway, but I'd never been there during Salone. And the reason I went was because we've just launched the new Superyacht Interiors book, which is this amazing showcase of some brilliant interiors brands. And the event itself was spectacular. We did it at Ralph Lauren, the big store there. We had 120 odd people. It was really buzzing. It was fantastic. Owners, designers, suppliers, the works, the whole gamut. It was great. But I was just so happy to be there, because in terms of the luxury world, there's no better touch point really for interiors anyway. So I just got dragged around by the commercial team and just met, you know, loads of people in about 48 hours. It's fantastic. Really, really good. And so nice to see so many super yacht faces there, because, you know, they're all there. It's great. Well, I'll be back next year for sure. I was a big, big fan of Salone. I'm quite kicking myself for neglecting it for so many years, but no longer.
Maybe a different Airbnb next year.
Yeah, not such an echoey Airbnb. One with decent Wi-Fi. And I did start off in the laundry room. I tried in the laundry room and I put loads of towels around me. But then that didn't work. So I ended up under a table. Yeah, next year I'll book better.
Airbnb with a podcast recording studio. Yeah, yeah. Niche.
So we should probably address an article that appeared in the New York Times. Not last weekend, but the weekend before. So obviously, anytime Boat International's referenced in the New York Times, I get an alert anyway, and I subscribe. So I saw the article fairly early on. It was an opinion piece, but it was on the front page of the international edition of the New York Times. And so for the next 24 or 36 hours, my phone just lit up with people sending me the link saying, "You've seen this, have you?" So basically, the piece was headlined, "The Super Yachts of Billionaires Are Starting to Look a Lot Like Theft." And it was a general excoriation of the super yacht industry. The thrust was the emissions from these yachts are completely unjustifiable. And since we weren't offered a right to reply, well, it was an opinion piece, to be fair, I thought I'd just include some comments here. I don't really want to get into an ethical relativism argument. I mean, everyone emits and everyone has a carbon footprint. No one's hands are entirely clean on that score. And the fact is the super yacht industry is a tiny, tiny fraction of global emissions. I mean, 3% of global carbon emissions are from commercial shipping around that. And super yachts are obviously, and yachting generally, is a tiny, tiny fraction of that. But that's absolutely no reason for complacency on our part. And there's lots of great initiatives from shipyards around the world to limit the carbon footprint of their vessels. And we'll talk about one in a minute. Just the other week, Balietto ran an event called B0 in Italy, which we'll talk about, like I said. And at the Superyacht Design Festival in February, FedShip, for the first time ever, revealed some of the technology behind the very exciting hydrogen-powered superyacht it is working on. Lursen, during the same session, also revealed more about its methanol fuel cell system currently being installed on a yacht. So across the industry, we're seeing lots of movement on this front, and those that aren't engaging are going to be left behind, frankly. And it's quite an avant-garde industry, sometimes the superyacht industry. And, you know, efforts on the hydrogen front and the methanol front will bleed across other industries and do, you know, huge amount of good in sectors that aren't quite as advanced. But nuance like that doesn't make for a great front page story often, especially in a social media age. But I did it did irritate me intensely that the author took such a stark and binary view and I think misrepresented the superyacht industry. We all know the talking points. Look, the superyachts, the industry employs hundreds of thousands of people around the world. It's a massive benefit to local economies, supports whole communities and families. And, you know, and you take yachting away from some parts of the world and they'd really struggle. I mean, you take all the yachts out of the Caribbean and those islands would be in a lot of trouble. Not to mention things like when there's a natural disaster, like a hurricane or something whips through a territory, often the first responders to get there are superyachts making water, delivering supplies and all that kind of stuff. But it's hard to cut through in a hot take like the one printed in the New York Times doesn't really take into consideration the whole picture. But if we think things are going to get better on the PR front for the superyacht industry, I think we're joking. Just the other day in the UK, protesters stormed the snooker at the Crucible and chucked yellow paint all over the snooker table. And we all know what happened at the Superyacht Forum in Amsterdam last year when Extinction Rebellion disrupted that event. So we're clearly entering a new age of protest and spectacle.
Do you think there's a playing devil's advocate? Is there a positive to be taken from that, though, that will, as you say, the superyacht industry has the ability to be at the forefront of some of these incredible technological changes, which will then spread across industry? And if there is more, albeit incorrect, but more spotlight and pressure being put on, there's an argument that might accelerate the process, because you also need owner buy-in as well. I think the industry is very aware of what needs to change, but you also need owners to take a gamble on these new technologies as well. And do you think if there is greater, wider external pressure, there is an argument that that could help accelerate some of those prototypes and some of those technologies to be put into place?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's becoming the pressure to build as green a yacht as possible is clearly filtering through to decisions being made in offices at shipyards around the world. And that's only going to get more stark. And I remember the owner of Kensho said the reason he chose a hybrid propulsion system and trying to, when he went as green as he possibly could go, was because his kids said to him, "Dad, you know, it's not cool to build this big boat and not make as bigger effort as you possibly can to make it as green as you can." So that societal pressure is ramping up, but it's tricky to fight back with a counter narrative about the green eco efforts the industry is making. And I don't think the mainstream press or the audience are prepared to hear that message. It's not cutting through. I don't think it will cut through. We can shout about it from the rooftops. But it's, you know, if you consider what the general, you know, media reading public hear about super yachting, they join the dots subconsciously in their head. They're not massively familiar with our industries. All they hear is occasional stories about billionaires, sanctions, tax evasion, Russia, Monaco, ostentation, all this kind of stuff. So that to them is super yachting. That's the narrative they appreciate and understand. They're not prepared generally, as people aren't, to get into the weeds and really understand the nuance of any particular industry. So to fight that with a bunch of green messaging is very, very hard. We should try. That's not to say we shouldn't try, but we'd be naive to think we're going to change people's minds. I mean, we do our best here at Boat International, and I write a column from the Times, and Caroline does one for the Telegraph, and we tell the great stories about superyachting. So there's ways we can try and change people's minds. But, so what's the answer? I'm asking you. I mean, for me, I think the principally, the narrative from the superyacht industry needs to be one about economic opportunity and contribution, and one about community as well. We will, of course, continue to strive and push for a zero carbon future for yachting. But until that's realized, we need to get kind of our shit together on the messaging front, really. And traditionally, industry bodies haven't been very good, been pretty ineffectual on that front, about presenting the good face of the soup yacht industry. I think we can do a lot better. I'm determined that we do better.
I also think there is quite an interesting geographical split, potentially. I think we are a lot more keenly aware of it in Europe and are facing greater pressure from it in Europe. I mean, I know this article was actually in the New York Times. The American brokers and that side of the industry seem to be less, this is obviously a big generalization, but less kind of aware of this sort of incoming pressure. And I don't know whether that's because where Extinction Rebellion and all that doesn't seem to have hit the US to the same extent. I say potentially is an unfair generalization, but I definitely think in Europe we're suddenly very aware, particularly with the war as well, of how the soup yacht industry is being viewed in Europe.
Yeah, I think we are. I'd agree broadly. I don't think the same issues are quite at the fore over in the States. But that's not to say it's not going to happen.
No, of course.
I think it will. I think it's inevitable. And I think we need to be prepared. And I think we need the best possible argument. And obviously, all the efforts the soup yacht industry is making on the green front have to be a part of that mix. But it can't be the only part, because I just don't think there's a massive amount of appetite from news editors out there at papers and websites that don't address the soup yacht community directly to write about those things. We should try, but I don't think the audience is necessarily there. But we should be doing more, a lot more on the messaging front and the community and economic front as well. So I've got a few ideas, and I'm talking to some people in the industry about how we address this at the moment.
And you're hoping, I don't know where I'm about to give away sense of information here, you're hoping that the global order book as well will hopefully be a part of that moving forwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, we've got to do a much better job of proving the economic benefit and how this industry improves so many lives around the world. I mean, it's an absolute truism to say that, whole communities in parts of Germany, Holland, I mean, Plymouth. I mean, we've said it in the podcast before, Princess employs almost 3,000 people. 3,000 people in Plymouth, Pendennis down in Falmouth. You know, these are some of these communities' biggest employers outside the government often. But no one ever celebrates it or shouts about it. And I think if there was a general appreciation, understanding of just how much good these businesses did for local communities, we just need to have those talking points ready at hand when we're hit, because it's going to happen more. So Katja journeyed over to La Spezia for this one. So the yard, Baglietto, revealed that they were developing a land-based prototype of a hydrogen production module called B0, which will eventually be installed on yachts in their range longer than 50 metres. So as well as the prototype, the yard also revealed the B0 power station will partially contribute to the shipyard's energy production cycle, they said, and announced they also have established a new department, Baglietto Energy, devoted to studying new eco-sustainable technologies and their use cases on board superyachts. So there's an explainer of how this all works on the website using some fairly technical language that is beyond me. But Fabio Ometto, the yard sales director, clearly sees the commercial advantage, like you identified earlier, Sophia, of developing a system like this, because it's just going to become more and more in demand. He said that the combination of hydrogen and batteries will result in 4 times more available energy than that insured by current batteries, which will also mean great savings for the owners. And, it's just a great sales message, isn't it? So it's a future-proofing move from the shipyard, and one we certainly applaud.
I don't know whether to admit this, but I hadn't realised that it was B0. I'd read it as Bezero.
Oh, no.
So I'm really glad you did that story.
We're keeping that in. That's not being cut out, by the way. Bezero. Why would we call it Bezero?
Sorry, everyone.
That's all right. Unbelievable. Let's talk about brokerage picks. I've talked quite enough so far. So you go first,
yeah,
and I'll go second.
I'm going to go first. I'll let you get your voice back for a minute. So my pick this week is slightly unusual, and I noticed it because I was keeping an eye on the numbers on the website while I was away, and I suddenly saw that brokerage news was looking particularly active. And that was because Bush & Noble had announced that they had listed the world's largest wooden superyacht for sale. So more than 20,000 people have now read this story about this 50-metre custom build, which has been created using a mixture of teak and GRP. Designed by Henson Maine International, it's pretty unique to look at. I'll add the link as usual in the podcast so that everyone can have a look for themselves if you're not one of the 20,000 people that already have. In terms of sort of other features, obviously the wood is the first thing you notice, but she also has a pretty impressive interior. So she's got a 10.6 meter beam, which includes a huge main salon with multiple seating areas and a formal dining area. And she also has accommodation for 12 guests and 6 staterooms, including 2 master cabins. Brett Noble, who's the co-founder of Bush & Noble, said it's truly one of a kind yacht that is sure to impress even the most discerning yachting enthusiasts. If you're interested, she's currently in Dubai and asking $9.995 million. Have you had a look, Stuart?
Yeah, I know about this boat. It's an extraordinary boat. I mean, it does look very wooden.
Yeah.
It looks pretty cool, to be honest.
I have many, many questions about how it came to be built and why they now aren't keeping it. Because you think if you opted to build the largest wooden superyacht in the world, you'd...
Maybe they're about to build the next largest wooden superyacht in the world.
Maybe. I'll get the team to do some digging.
60-metre teak construction. I mean, yeah, wild-looking thing. Go and have a look.
A novelty brokerage pick this week.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. So I've gone for 55.2 meter Lady A, which belongs to none other than Lord Sugar. Built in Japan in 1986. She's been listed by Simon Goldsworthy at Edmiston, asking 11.5 million euros VAT paid, importantly. So why have I chosen this boat? Well, one, she's a Bannenberg. And second, she was once owned by Aussie business magnate and America's Cup backer Alan Bond. So I actually did a postgraduate degree at Bond University in Australia. So I'm quite
love a niche university.
Quite fond of Bondi, and you know, it gives me another opportunity to talk about the fact that Alan Bond was the money behind Australia's famous 1983 America's Cup win in Newport. Winged keels, Ben Lexon, John Bertrand, Dennis Connor. A bunch of pissed off guys in blazers whinging about these Southern Hemisphere upstarts. Australian Prime Minister Bob Hawke telling the entire country to go out and get drunk. I mean, the story has it all. In retrospect...
You've really gone off on a tangent here.
I know, I'll get back to Lady A in a minute. So Dennis Connor said after that defeat that losing the Cup in 1983 had been good for the sport of sailing and the Cup itself. He said, me losing after 132 years, imagine losing a trophy after 132 years. Me losing after 132 years was the best thing that ever happened to the America's Cup and the best thing that ever happened to Dennis Connor. Before the win by the Australians, the America's Cup was only big in the minds of yachties, but the rest of the world didn't know or care about it at all. But when we lost it, it was a little bit like losing the Panama Canal. Suddenly everyone appreciated it. If I hadn't lost it, there would never have been the national effort. Without that, there never would have been the ticker tape parade up Fifth Avenue in New York, lunch with the president at the White House, and all the doors of opportunity that it opened.
It's a nice quote, but I do judge him for referring to himself in the third person.
Well, he's Dennis Connor.
It happened to Dennis Connor.
Yeah, he can do what he likes. He's a legend. Anyway, back to Lady A. So Simon sent me through some more info about the boat. She was almost entirely rebuilt in the UK in 2017, with the owner spending more than 12 million euros on her. So that's actually more than she's asking now. So the refit or the rebuild costs more than her current asking price. She carries 879 gross tons in her 55 meters, so loads of space. So using Boat Pro, I looked at the average gross tonnage of every superyacht in the world between 55 and 55.5 meters. So the average gross tonnage in that mini span comes in at 652 gross tons. So Lady A performing very well there. In fact, of the 71 superyachts floating that are between 55 meters and 55.5 meters, Lady A is the fourth most voluminous on that list. So it just goes to show how much space you're getting for the money.
It's an impressive rabbit hole you've got yourself.
Yeah, I know. America's Cup and Boat Pro. Yeah. I mean, boat, you can literally go down a mega rabbit hole in Boat Pro. I love it. So that refit, the big refit I mentioned, she got an entirely new interior, some layout changes, bigger master cabin, extension to the aft deck, bigger sun deck. She's got cat engines, so it can be serviced anywhere on planet Earth. They were rebuilt in 2021. The interior is pretty calm, modern. So it's not a teardown if you buy her. And like I said at the top, she's a Bannenberg, which is sort of like owning a Picasso. She's in Toulon currently, Lady A, and asking 11.5 million euros.
Seemingly we'll have to negotiate with Lord Sugar, though.
you will have to negotiate with Lord Sugar.
Or Simon Goldsworthy.
And Simon Goldsworthy. So Alan Bond, Lord Sugar, it could be you. You could join that esteemed list of owners if you picked up Lady A. Okay, we've been pretty heavy this week, haven't we? We've talked about New York Times, perceptions of super yachting, bad karaoke.
Yeah, my side's been decidedly lighter. I've brought karaoke and wooden super yachts.
I know. Let's go through some headlines. Why don't you kick us off with the first story?
So first up, we have that FedShip has launched its 84-meter Project 710, which uses second-generation biodiesel in its generators, which is reported to reduce carbon emissions by up to 90%. Silverhull Superyacht has a pretty futuristic exterior look designed by RWD in collaboration with Monk Design. Her other eco-credentials are that she has 4.5 times more electric storage capacity than FedShip's first hybrid yacht, which was, of course, Savannah. And she also has no drive shaft and no rudders. Instead, electric drive and steering are used through a pair of Veth-Contra rotating thrusters. I'm not quite sure I quite understand what that means, Stuart. I might need your expertise here. Stuart's doing a lovely impression with his hands, which is really useful for a podcast.
Moving on.
Right, good. Look that up yourself. Design features also include an aqua lounge with large windows below sea level, similar to the Nemo Lounge, which is found on Savannah, as well as an asymmetrical atrium staircase leading to a lower deck dining salon, which when it opens reveals a terrace view just above sea level. Construction on the new build began in 2020, and once delivered, the yacht will be FedShip's 17th largest, and it will also mark its 17th collaboration between RWD and FedShip.
Oh, it marries up nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Neat. Next up, we have the news that 145-meter Lursen Superyacht Project Luminance has been spotted leaving the yard as she heads out on sea trials. Construction on the Mammoth project began in 2018, but few details have been revealed since. She is ranked number 11 in the largest yachts in the world and is the seventh largest project ever built by Lursen. Exterior design comes from the boards of Espinoino and marks the 30th collaboration between the designer and the shipyard. Interior design comes from Francoise Uretti, but details remain a closely guarded secret. The yacht is expected to be delivered later this year. In other Lursen news, the 90-meter superyacht Project 1601 has been named Norn. The utilitarian-styled yacht, which features the same design team as 70.7-meter Scat, is expected to be delivered at the end of the month.
Busy in Germany.
Yeah.
So elsewhere, we actually had this on the news list for last week, but we feel it's worth keeping on there. So that is that Monaco Yacht Show has announced that it's returning to Port Hercule for its 32nd edition from the 27th to the 30th of September. I can't believe we're talking about Monaco Yacht Show already, but it will be here before we know it. According to the event organisers, this year there will be an impressive lineup of 120 superyachts available on the market. 2023 Monaco Yacht Show will also mark the second year of its three-year development programme titled Seducation. The new initiative was built around four key pillars: environmental innovation, design, understanding of yachting and visitor experience, and aims to elevate the show's offering through an immersive and educational discovery of the latest and most innovative yachting trends.
It's so close to seduction, isn't it? Seducation, when you see it written.
You think, I genuinely panicked after my old B0 mess up earlier.
Where are they going with this? Anyway, last, we have the news that the acquisition of Princess Yachts by US equity firm KPS Partners is now complete. According to UK Business Register Companies House, a new company has been set up under the name Mayflower Bidco Limited, which now owns 75% of the British shipyard. Ryan Harrison, a partner of KPS Midcap Investments, said the equity firm was excited to make this significant investment in Princess Yachts in a move that would broaden KPS's existing portfolio of manufacturers spanning the US and Europe. According to data from Boat Pro, Princess Yachts has 36 superyachts in excess of 24 meters currently under construction, including five 29-meter X95s and six units of its Y85 series. In further development, the yard unveiled the all-new S72 at Boot Düsseldorf in January. So, data.
Data, the part we've all been waiting for. As ever, brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence platform. And we have the brokerage numbers from Q1. And as I think we probably all expected, they've shown a marked slowdown in comparison to previous years. Gravity has returned, it seems. We'll have a much more detailed report on this going up in our, it's actually part of our Boat Pro premium content. So that will be available next week, and that will have industry insight, lots of wonderful graphs and infograms displaying this, as well as insight and analysis from our lovely brokerage editor, Nick. But in short, some of the numbers. So 87 super yachts were sold by brokers in the first quarter this year, which compares to 160 in Q1 2022 and 150 in Q1 2021 and 92 in Q1 2020. And going back to 2019, that number was also 88. So I guess it's on a par with 2019 and 2020. But as we've explained previously, 2019 and 2020 were still considered strong years. It's just that then we've had this kind of exceptional bump since. Yeah. So I don't think there's a cause for kind of huge panic or alarm. The average of yachts sold in Q1 over the last few years basically all aligned. So the average length is about 36 meters and the average gross tonnage is around the 300 mark. The two figures that kind of jump out are the average asking price and the average age. So the average asking price for yachts sold in Q1 this year was 11.4 million, which is actually up on 2022, 2021 and 2020, but slightly behind 2019. It's the same story on average age. So in Q1 this year, the average age of a yacht sold was 13.9. Boats were sold younger in previous years, except for 2019, when the average age was 13.8. So I guess what we're seeing from that top number around average asking price is, would you say that there's more quality stock being sold, Stu, if you're seeing less, slightly less numbers, but higher quality?
I think that probably shows. I mean, there's we're dealing with a much smaller sample with only 87 yachts, aren't we, as well? And there might be much less activity in the 24 to 30 to 40 meter range, which was the really explosive part of the last couple of years. So that kind of part of the market might have slowed down significantly, which is pushing up that average asking price a little bit. But it's interesting, the numbers seem to have almost kind of bounced straight back to where we were in 2019 across kind of all the metrics that we track. And 2019 was a good year. So if we end this year on this around on parity with 2019, I think that's still a very, very good year.
Yeah.
And we'll bring you more updates, obviously, as the year progresses. Nick Jeffrey, yeah, he's busy piecing that together now, isn't he?
He is. I didn't have a chance to check in on our champagne bet. So where that yeah. would put us.
I completely forgot what number I said.
I'll have to go back and dig it out.
Yeah, we'll have a look at that and see where we are. See who's in the frame.
I think I was quite pessimistic. So I think...
Cut price champagne.
Every year.
Every year. And that brings us to an end of this week's Boat Briefing. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Sophia.
Pleasure.
Thank you to our brand new podcast mixer and producer, Naomi Wilson. This has been a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'll see you next time.